The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
LinkedIn presents.
Back when I developed an anxiety disorder, I had no idea what was going on. I thought I'd just gone bananas, finally lost my mind. A big part of what inspired me to be a therapist was modeling my approach on the ideal therapist I wished I had at the beginning of my own struggles with mental health. For me, psychoeducation and understanding what was happening in my brain and body was really helpful in lessening how scary the symptoms of anxiety were.
Hi, it's Tuesday, and this is the Next Big Idea Daily. I'm your host, Michael Kovnat, and even though I'm not currently in therapy, I definitely have been in the past. Some people are shy about admitting it, but the fact is, for many of us, psychotherapy is a great way to learn about ourselves, manage emotions, and improve our relationships with others. Of course, therapy can be expensive and intimidating, so many people avoid going even if they know they could benefit. If that describes you, check out these big ideas from the new book, And How Does That Make You Feel? Everything You Never Wanted to Know About Therapy by Joshua Fletcher, who goes by Anxiety Josh on social media. Joshua is a leading UK-based psychotherapist specializing in anxiety and the host of the podcasts Disordered and The Panic Pod. Here he is to share his key insights.
Therapy is cool, like genuinely cool. I personally put off therapy for a long time because I thought it was tough not to talk about feelings. I grew up in a small rugby town in England where feelings were often processed by running full force into another human being holding an egg-shaped ball. It was only after developing a crippling anxiety disorder, which included many panic attacks, agoraphobia, and OCD, did I realize the power of therapy, and it helped me to grow as a human being. I am not a cool person, but it is my passion to make therapy cool, or at least a little bit more appealing for people who have perhaps been adverse to it, or shy away from it because of the stigma surrounding asking for help. I'm also passionate about challenging emotional conservatism, which is the reverence of hiding or repressing emotions in favor of keeping a stern, external appearance. For a lot of people, strength is often unhealthily measured on our ability to push down or hide from emotions. Picture your stereotypical British guy with a stiff upper lip, sipping tea from his keep calm and carry on mug. I challenge the notion of therapy being something you go to when you're weak. Therapy is not always straightforward. It's not a linear process of positive growth, where each session ends with you smiling and leaping towards self-actualization. Therapy can be messy, challenging, and extremely confronting, not only for the client, but also for me as a therapist. The book explores the beautiful intricacies and nuance of two strangers coming together, one trained in therapy, protected by the sanctity of anonymity, as they both navigate through personal difficulties whilst building a foundation of trust. Have you ever wanted to know what your therapist is thinking? You're sat there, and they're staring at you whilst you divulge personal and sensitive information. Have you ever thought, what on earth must they be thinking right now? Our thoughts are dictated by various facets of our mind and personality. Take this for example. Imagine the thought process behind ordering a cheeseburger. The biology voice might say, yes, put that in my mouth, please. Whereas anxiety voice may say, yeah, but that's not healthy. Analytical voice chimes in with, yeah, but we've eaten clean all week. I'm sick of kale smoothies. But critic voice retorts with, you're forgetting that cheeseburger you had for breakfast this morning. These are an example of four voices that squabble in our minds. These voices are joined by the voices of compassion, detective, empathy, escapist, intuition, irreverence, savior, trigger, and volition. They sometimes agree, sometimes argue, and this process is something I wish to share with people to demystify the often ostentatious facade of a stereotypical therapist. For example, in one of the chapters, I find myself with Levi, a scary-looking doorman who himself has his guard up because he is vulnerable to be in the therapy room for the first time. When we are first introduced to Levi, there's a moment where we both walk down the corridor to my office. My internal voices start to chatter as follows. Anxiety. This guy is scary. Analytical. I can see he's clenching and unclenching his fists. Critic. He's taking up so much space. You're going to end up mashed against the wall. Empathy. He must be nervous, and people display nerves in different ways. It's not personal. Levi settles and begins to ask initial questions about therapy. Levi, so when are you going to start reading my mind? Tell me all my problems are because daddy didn't love me. Josh, it doesn't quite work like that. I can't read minds, unfortunately. A psychotherapist's main job is to listen and provide a safe space. Of course, my mind is still chatting away, certain voices giving their two cents. Irreverence. It's always the parents. Analytical, perhaps. Detective, we obviously need to know more. Will you guys shut up? Sometimes I absolutely nail it. Solid 10 out of 10 therapy. And sometimes I misjudge it or get it wrong. However, what I would like to show is that my intentions come from a place of unconditional positive regard for my clients, similar to any therapist, with this unconditionality being a powerful rudder in steering us through the therapy process. What does a therapist get up to outside of the therapy room? A lot of people think that therapists have got all the ducks in order, practicing meditation daily, eating thrice fermented kimchi for our gut biomes, and filling out our gratitude journals whilst walking through the woods. Whilst some therapists may do this, and sometimes I do, minus the kimchi, therapists shouldn't be feared. They're pretty relatable as people. They're not omnipotent know-it-alls that have everything sorted. We have our own vices, our own personal issues, and things we are always working on. I believe that when people see therapists as more human, it may encourage them to seek one should they feel they need it. In a world where some people are self-diagnosing themselves via TikTok, I have come to appreciate the value of sound insights from professionals. I love that, as a society, we're talking about mental health more, but admittedly, the subject can be tricky and often heavy. Back when I developed an anxiety disorder, I had no idea what was going on. I thought I'd just gone bananas, finally lost my mind. A big part of what inspired me to be a therapist was modeling my approach on the ideal therapist I wished I had at the beginning of my own struggles with mental health. For me, psychoeducation and understanding what was happening in my brain and body was really helpful in lessening how scary the symptoms of anxiety were. Therapy is often a field shrouded in mystery. I love talking about the different types of therapists that exist. Many people don't know that therapists are trained in a multitude of different modalities, such as cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, person-centered, and psychodynamic, to name a few. Therapists can be very passionate about the school of thought or practicing philosophy they have trained in, which can lead to conflicting views and, in some cases, partisanship in the field of talking therapies. Imagine different tribes of therapists all endeavoring to be as self-righteous and virtuous as one another. Team Freud are the Chiefs, Jungian therapists are the Steelers, Rogerian therapists are the Jets, CBT therapists are the Dolphins, you get what I'm talking about. One of the most serious chapters discusses the beauty of therapy and why finding a therapist that connects with you is such an incredible thing.
Thank you, Joshua. Listeners, I hope you found those ideas helpful. But if you're still on the fence about getting therapy, check out Joshua's book, And How Does That Make You Feel? Everything You Never Wanted to Know About Therapy. You can get it at your favorite bookstore. Tomorrow, I'll be back with some more useful ideas, this time from neuroscientist Tali Sharrett. She and Harvard Law Professor Cass Sunstein have just put out a book called Look Again, The Power of Noticing What Was Always There. If anything in your life is feeling a little stale, like your living situation, your relationship, or your job, you'll want to hear Tali's ideas for what she calls resparkling. I'm Michael Kovnat. See you tomorrow.